Welcome to the Healthy Podcast, where we invite you to invest in your well-being and unlock the secrets of vibrant health, peak performance, and wellness. Join us, Sebastian Mirau and Johannes Kettelhout, co-founders of Australia and New Zealand's leading wellness company, as we dive deep into the science, strategies, and stories that empower you to live your healthiest, happiest life. Whether you are a CEO, high achiever, entrepreneur, elite athlete, health enthusiast, scientist, or self-improvement seeker, together we will explore the cutting edge of biohacking techniques and holistic health practices with world-class experts that optimize your mind, body, and spirit. With each episode, you will walk away with practical and actionable steps to integrate in your daily life. Are you ready? Let's elevate your well-being.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Healthy Podcast. So excited to have you here and so excited to have Gino Bartolomeo with me today as well. He's an amazing human being who has had quite a journey from starting off as a chartered accountant to a world-renowned breathworker and psychedelic expert. He created an amazing documentary that is free on YouTube, basically describing the journey of the psychedelics in society all the way back from the ancient to today and where we are today. It's a real pleasure to have him here. I love listening to him. He is really well spoken. He's really easy to follow and he has a lot of amazing information to share. So without further ado, here is Gino. Gino, so you had quite a change of career within a couple of years, really, of being in university and then going all the way deep into health, psychedelics, and breathwork and becoming world-renowned for what you're doing and helping a lot of people and training even the trainers. How did you get there? What was the initial sort of seed to actually get to that place?
Yeah, I don't know how early you want me to start the story, but one thing just reflecting right now is like my whole life, I was trying to figure things out. I was trying to figure it out. You know what I mean? And my brain was like my superpower, smart kid growing up. And I was trying to figure things out so I could feel like I could relax, like I get the answers. And through all of my journeys, the one thing I've just realized in the last few years is there's nothing to figure out. There's nothing to figure out. Like everything is the way it is supposed to be. And part of it is not figuring it out, is experiencing it and being open to this beautiful, like, creation and this limitless opportunity, the fluidity of it versus this kind of like structured left brain, next step, figure it out, get all the answers, build this kind of protection. And, you know, I think it started like as a kid, you know, like when I was a kid, I was kind of smart. You know, I went to like a smart kid school. I hated it. I was also smart at convincing my parents to like, hey, like get me out of this place. I promise I get straight A's. And, you know, went through school and I grew up in an area in Greater Toronto area. And it was a pretty well-to-do area, you know, like nice houses, nice cars. Some kids were coming to school and like, I remember it was the 90s. So like at the time it was like the Golf GTI. I don't know if you remember those cars, Volkswagen. Yep. And they had these like Momo rims on it. I was just like, I couldn't afford a car. These kids are like driving cars my parents probably couldn't afford. And it was kind of that mentality, you know, like, okay, you know, I associated my net worth and self-worth as the same. And that was kind of the talk. You know, my parents were like, hey, if you want to be respected, if you want to be successful, if you're going to make anything of yourself, you got to make money. And the way to make money is you got to do good in school and you got to get a good job. And, you know, my dad always wanted me to be a chartered accountant. And it's not really, nothing against chartered accountants. I have some great chartered accountant friends, but it was not me. Like that wasn't me. I love numbers. I was good at math, but, it wasn't me. But a certain level of accounting, he was like a general accountant and he would look around at all the people that got their CA. So he was kind of imposing on me his kind of shortcomings, his kind of like, oh, I wish I would have done this. And he thought that I could be the one that could, you know, bring all this respect and pride. And they were really proud of me. And so I remember I got into a business school, Schulich School of Business in Toronto, and it was a pretty prestigious school. And I remember going to my third year accounting years when you really kind of step in, okay, now you're going to choose general business. Now it's like, okay, like you're being a company accountant. And I remember going to the school bookstore, middle of winter, and the parking lots are like a couple miles away from anything at school, at these big school campuses. So I remember walking there, freezing cold. And it was the first time I remember feeling like I guess like something was speaking to me. And I saw that in a repeating number, and the textbook for this, about this thick third year Canadian tax law, was $111. And this number just kind of like flashed at me, also because it was a lot of money for me at the time. And I bought it, and I was walking away back to my car in the freezing cold, and it felt like I was carrying a sack of rocks on my back. And it was like, is this what you're really going to do the rest of your life? And then the thought of my mind was like, hey, every day that goes by, the bookstore is going to give you less of a refund on this book. So decide now. If you're going to do this, you got to decide now. And I was like, no, this is not for me. So I turned around, I went back, got the full refund, and I switched all of my courses from accounting to things like marketing and entrepreneurship and stuff like that. Oh, wow. I was already a bit of an entrepreneur. Like I had like a, my first entrepreneurial endeavor was in high school. I started selling like study notes for our chemistry exams and stuff like that. And people like bought it. I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I started a clothing line. I started this company. We called it Socks with Locks. It was like socks with little buttons on them. So when you take them off, you snap them together, throw them in the wash, they come out already matched. It was such a good idea. I was like, you know, but then I realized the clothing stores, they like it when people lose socks because like they sell more socks, you know, and internet sales wasn't really a thing then. So I didn't have this really direct to consumer opportunity now. But anyways, so I was an entrepreneur. And after that, I just really started focusing. What do I do to make money? Like all kinds of different businesses. You know, I opened a tattoo shop at a construction company. You know, I was into sales. I got insurance sales at one time. Usually running like multiple businesses or jobs, you know, just was like hustle, party on the weekends, you know, drinking, doing a lot of very unhealthy things.
Yeah.
Somewhere in my early 20s, I had a bit of a health scare, which I completely made up in my mind, but I believed it was real. And for like 6 months, I thought I was dying. And that was my first kind of entry point, I guess, as an awakening, more of a spiritual awakening, when you actually think you're dying. And you start really contemplating life. It didn't change my hunger for money and success at that point, but what it did was turn me onto health. And I started researching like health, started losing faith in the medical industry and like understanding how profits work and how customers are made and how keeping people just sick enough or well enough to keep them as a customer was kind of what it seemed like they were doing. And that always kind of stuck with me. Once I found out that I wasn't actually dying, it was just a figment of my imagination. It's a really long, funny, crazy story, but I won't get into that now. I forgot about it. And I was like, okay, I'm good, you know, and yeah, like, I'll exercise and whatever, you know? And so around that time, you know, next few years, I started making some money and, you know, I was in the food business. We were selling, I was brokering food for companies in the GTA. We were selling all up and down the Eastern Seaboard in North America. And I started making some money and, you know, I realized that, you know, like I had a nice car in the driveway and a nice house and I'd achieved all the things that I thought I really need to achieve to be happy. And I was married and I had a kid. I don't know if I had one on the way yet when I had this experience, but I remember one day sitting at the edge of my bed and I was kind of just sitting there. It was weird because I wasn't really into meditation or stuff like that. And I had this kind of like daydream. And again, almost like something was speaking to me beyond myself. And I remember looking at my hands and I kind of like envisioned them as my grandfather's hands. My grandfather's probably like late 80s at the time, old wrinkly hands. And the thought that came to my mind was, yeah, Mr. You know, Smarty Pants, you figure out how to live a pretty comfortable life. You don't work that much. You make good money. You go on a couple of vacations a year and blah, blah, blah. And you're going to do the same thing for the next 20, 30, 40 years. And you'll wake up at the same edge of this bed. And you look back and you'll be like, what was the point? Who cares? No one's going to remember you. You didn't do anything that impacted. Like what is it? It just, in that moment, it was just like, whatever I was doing felt so pointless. And I felt a feeling. And the feeling I felt, I could only describe as unfulfillment. It was this like new realization of this feeling I had. And as soon as I recognized it was there, it didn't go away. It felt more and more. I'd go into like work. We had a food manufacturing. We were making these like clusters and I started fighting with my partners more. And the construction company was just like, oh, I don't want to be here. And like pointless, meaningless, just this hamster wheel that I had found myself in. And you know, before like I could use my brain to figure things out. And this one, it wasn't like the problem wasn't like a formula or something that I could figure out. It was like, okay, man. there's something else here. So I remember, doing what everyone does when they got a problem. It's like they go to Google and they type in, like, what's the meaning of life? And, expecting it's going to give them something. Maybe AI is going to be able to do that one day. But for me, it was just like, start pulling up all of these like esoteric texts and Buddhist philosophy. It was like, okay, I'm going to get into this. Maybe I'll find something here. And just really start absorbing it intellectually. I got my first tattoo around that time. And my tattoo artist was a Hare Krishna monk. And he got me into the Bhagavad Gita and Hinduism. And I became a vegetarian and really started believing in that philosophy. And was kind of going through all the motions. I remember one day I was watching a YouTube, Alan Watts. He's like a English kind of Buddhist philosopher. And I really loved his stuff. Only to find out later he still struggled with his own issues in life, although how kind of smart and connected he was. But anyways, in the comments, there was a comment that said something along the lines of, if you think Alan Watts is interesting, Terrence McKenna will blow your mind. I've been like researching all these guys. I never heard this guy. Who is this guy? Yeah. So I YouTube search him. And from the second I started listening to him, I was just like, totally absorbed into what he was saying. He was like a poet, a philosopher, and someone who was really into the use of plant medicines, entheogens, in his journeys. And he kind of was into mushrooms, went down to South America to look for these magic mushrooms, and he stumbled across ayahuasca deep in the Amazon basin. And he's explaining his experiences, and I'm just hearing him tell these stories, and I'm like, okay, I had this feeling. It was like, there's something here for you. And it's not so often I get those feelings. It's just so like, starts grabbing me. I'm thinking about it all the time. No one I know knows anything about this stuff, so I can't really talk to people about it. And like a couple of days later, I'm watching Netflix with my wife, and what comes on, it says DMT, the spirit molecule. Now, I wouldn't have known what DMT was, and that video on Netflix wouldn't even caught my attention if I wasn't studying like ayahuasca videos. And so I watch it, and I totally like, and for however it was a documentary, I was just like in it. And I remember seeing the look on people's eyes as they were explaining their story. And I knew I have to understand what they're experiencing, because I know the words are they're just trying to put words to an experience that is ineffable. It's an experience that you can't even put words to. And I'm curious. So I end up buying the book, DMT Spirit Molecule. I reach out to Rick Strassman, who is the guy who did the study, the doctor. I'm like, hey, Rick, sign me up. When's your next study? I want to do this DMT kind of thing or whatever. And he's like, yeah, man, there's only one. No one else is studying this in the world right now. But go down to Brazil. I know this guy. They do ayahuasca. It's the closest thing you'll get. It's a little bit different, but, go there. And I'm like, all right. So I reach out to this place and I'm like, hey, Rick told me to contact you. And he's like, they're like, yeah, absolutely. Here's the cost. Here's how it is, 2 weeks. So now I'm like, okay, I don't know if this is going to happen or not.
In the sense that when you said like no one else in your surrounding was talking about it, because I think this is a really, really common situation that, when you expand your mind into a new subject matter, and especially if it is one that is not as common, there's quite a sense of being alone as well. So it's great that your wife was into it as well, because when you said no one else,
she wasn't into it. She wasn't into it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even heard of it. And where we were, like, not a lot of people, it existed, but not in our consciousness. So I got all the information. Now I just like have to tell my wife, who is now kind of pregnant with our second on the way. And I'm like, hey, sweetie, I'm going to go down to Brazil and I'm going to drink this magical potion that's going to make me hallucinate for 2 weeks and with a bunch of strangers. And I think it's going to be really good for me. She's like, are you completely insane? Have you lost your mind? Like, she knew I was already a little bit crazy, but like she thought I'd lost it. And it was a lot of negotiation. I think she ended up getting a new car lease out of it for a car that she really wanted to rip up the budget.
Whatever it takes.
But I was determined. And by the end of it, she was supporting me fully. She's like, okay, like she saw how intrigued and interested and I was, and she gave me the green light. And in that experience, first night I had a death experience where the only way to explain it is I thought I died for real. Like it was like, you know, this experience of me kind of like getting beaten to death. It was scary. It was ugly. It was uncomfortable. And then the lights went out. And then I realized, I must have died. It was really quiet. And then all of a sudden, I start feeling all of these like maggots eating my body. And as I bring my awareness to them, I become a million maggots. Like my consciousness splits from singular to all of these things at the same time. And it's very difficult to explain in words. And from then I turned into like the soil and the grass, and I just shot through, and I could see the sun and the light. And it was went from the most scariest, darkest, like fearful experience to the most liberating, expansive, feeling like I was connected to God experience. Like I just felt what it felt to be part of creation. And, you know, the rest of the week went on. I got to meet my grandfather, who died when I was like a young baby, like not even a year old. And I had all these flashbacks of memories I would have had with him if he was alive, going fishing, speaking to me, laughing, crying. And the whole week was like a lot of firsts for me, like vomiting, diarrhea, highest highs, lowest lows, like you name it. But really what it did was it humbled me. It humbled me in a way where this like young kid who thought he knew everything, like, you know, like realized I knew nothing, like nothing about anything. And I was so lost and so, you know, just like misled, but not intentionally, just, you know, the way I grew up, and everyone was trying to do their best and figure it out. And I was just part of this experience. And I just think that's what's going on with everyone in the world, right? We're just trying to do our best to figure things out. And I came back and I was like, now what? You know, okay, like life is different and my perspective is different. I feel better. Like the unfulfillment was kind of still there, but there was also an excitement. So I knew I had to make changes, and I knew what I was doing was not what I would be doing. I didn't know what to do exactly yet, but first thing was like, I need to meet some new people. I need to find people who are into things that I'm not into, that I can learn from, that I can share with, that I can explore. And that kind of started off this kind of new life for me in a way, you know. So I met some guys, I watched a documentary, they're from Toronto, and they had this website, and I was like, I want to volunteer for you guys, like for free, whatever you need me to do, like I'll write blogs, whatever. So I ended up starting a podcast, and I started reaching out to some people that I just wanted to talk to that I thought were interesting, that I could learn from, you know. It was so perfect for what I was, you know, this expansive feeling of just wanting to absorb more information. And one of the people I reached out to was a guy named Wim Hof. And before I'd reached out to Wim, we would have these gatherings. We'd get like 20 people for an evening, and we'd just have topics of conversation and play videos that were interesting. And whether it was Institute of Heart Math or, you know, things about nutrition or some cool TED talk. And I remember researching, like trying to find interesting people or things. And I see this video of this guy climbing a mountain in his shorts and swimming underwater for like 100 meters and running in, and I'm like, this guy is like superhuman. But there was something about him also that he was like saying like, hey, you can do this too, type of vibe. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna reach out to this guy. So, and the timing was so important, because if it was 1 year later, like I think he was just on the upswing of becoming popular at that time. It's probably like 2014. And so I reached out to him. He said, yes, we did a podcast, we became friends, and he invited me to do a training with him. And, you know, this is how I got into like breath work, right? Like right now, breath work is a huge part of my life. And at the time, I didn't know anything about breath work. I've just been getting into meditation. He also was into ice baths and cold exposure. And, you know, now like, you know, everyone's into that. But again, like I was like a first, like no one was doing ice baths in 2014. And I, you know, when I started like taking videos of me jumping in like a bucket of ice in my back, and I was like, are you crazy? You know, like shoveling my driveway, my shorts, my neighbors are just like, so I go to this training it was in Colorado in the Rockies. And, you know, at the time I was trying to build a social media following. I was getting to health and wellness, you know, still kind of like in my ego a bit, and like, okay, I gotta get followers, you know, like who cares if I'm saying stuff, no one's listening. I'm like, okay, this is gonna be a good opportunity. If I get a picture with Wim in my shorts, you know, for sure, you know, people are gonna want to follow me. It was just so silly. But anyways, that was kind of where I was at. Also kind of going down the spiritual wellness path at the same time, just learning about myself. And I get there and, you know, probably about 30, 40 people, very kind of, I would say the environment was like competitive. People were into health and wellness, and probably around, you know, the youngest, probably 30 up to close to 60. And, you know, they start going around the circle and everyone's telling their story of why they're there. And story after story, I'm just getting blown away. People sharing how in the last 6 months to a year with, you know, cold exposure, being in nature and doing daily breath work, overcome addiction, depression, getting off meds, lowering their blood pressure, sleeping at night, physical chronic pain, diseases, like you name it, like, you know, trauma and, you know, infertility. And I'm just like, is this for real? Like, where am I right now? You know, and it comes around to me, and I just felt like an imposter. I was like, you know, so I'm just, I don't know why I'm here. I'm here for the experience. You know, I thought it'd be cool to get a picture with Wim, and you know, like, hey, that's what I'm here for. I didn't really know why I was there after that. You know, I was okay. So we go through the week, and we're doing all these awesome things, jumping in frozen lakes. And I remember this one experience where, you know, we're all in this lake, and it was freezing cold early morning, and the bottom of the lake, the mud was like silt. So your feet would sink in. You couldn't even touch the bottom. And I felt like the silt was even colder than the water. It was just like disgustingly cold. And of course, we're a bunch of competitive guys. No one wants to be the first one to go out of the water. So we're in there for like a long time.
Yeah.
To the point where like I thought a couple of guys weren't going to make it back, like turning white. I couldn't feel my feet for like almost an hour, like couldn't feel them at all. I was walking back like with two stumps, it felt like. And I was like, oh, my wife's gonna appreciate this when I call her, let her know, like I had to get my toes chopped off because I went on this like mountain retreat. But they came back. It's amazing because Wim also ran a marathon north of the Arctic Circle in barefoot. And in that, he got frostbite on his toes, and they said that he had to chop them off, and he was able to bring them back to life through like focused meditation and breathing. He revived his feet somehow, which is insane. Anyways, so towards the end of the week, now I'm just like a believer. I'm like, okay, like I'm going to do whatever this guy says. Like I believe, you know, like this has been an amazing experience. I pushed myself past crazy limits that I thought weren't impossible. So he leads us on this breathing experience. And in the experience, you know, he's just like, hey, breathe. He's chanting. He's playing a drum, like doing his Wim Hof kind of thing. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going for it, pushing myself. All of a sudden, I feel this like vibration moving through my body, almost like a jet engine taking off. I'm just like, whoa, what is this? My hands, my feet. And I just keep going with it. And all of a sudden, blast off. I'm like completely out of body. I'm floating around like the roof of this like 20-foot high log cabin. And I'm looking down at myself. I can see myself. And I'm just like freaked out. Like, yeah. Like I would say, like, now I'd probably be like, this is the coolest thing ever. In that moment, I was like, did I die? Like, that was the first thing I asked. Did something happen? Like, and that fear kind of like snapped me back in my body. But the comeback was like, I felt reborn. Like, I opened my eyes like I was a newborn baby, and I felt this swell of emotion. Like I'm going to start crying, like really badly. And I'm like trying to hold it down because like there's all these competitive dudes around me. And I'm like, fuck it. And I just start crying, like uncontrollably, tears flowing, boogers coming out, like really cry. Like, I didn't cry like that since I was like a kid. That's what it reminded me of. And what started coming to me in that moment was me letting go of all of this expectation of needing to be successful, needing to be the primary caretaker of my parents, of my family, like being successful, like all of this pressure that I'd put on myself and been hard on myself for and judged myself for. It was just like, dude, forget about all that. You're doing a great job. It's okay. Like, look at how far you've come. And it was the most euphoric feeling. And I just let that all go. And I felt like $1 million after that, like a new person.
You know, would you say that you had more pressure than the average son? Are you the firstborn? Maybe your firstborn. That, you know, than other people. Like, do you think there was a lot of that, or did you put a lot of that on yourself without it was even saying? And the reason why I ask is because if I think like people listening to that, you know, that's quite a journey that you went through. And maybe you can nowadays shortcut and just go, you know, to actually breathing exercises and you will get the same result. But like, would you say your baggage or your conditioning was extremely big? Or would you say, no, this is quite normal, and someone who wants to let go of it will probably have a release like that?
Yeah. So what I carry with me was unique to me, but very common between a lot of other people. The ways that they pick up those beliefs about themselves can be different. Yeah. And for me, like growing up as a kid, money defined two things for me. Money meant that I'm going to have a lot of people around me because I'm successful and they'll like me. And money was also security because, you know, yes. I was afraid of being unsafe. And growing up as the oldest kid, I never had older brothers, went to a few different schools growing up. Always felt like I wasn't protected or safe, you know, and my parents didn't have a lot of money and I saw the struggles they had. So there was this belief that, you know, like that's really important. Plus the belief that I needed that to be successful and worthy. And then also, you know, the other thing was I had a fear of being alone. And I associated money also with like, hey, if you're successful, you're going to be alone. People don't want to stay with you and be with you and blah, blah, blah. So I had a lot of beliefs that were tied into this kind of like expectation of success and making money. And where I picked them up. And it was only till like the last few years doing a lot of work on myself, I started realizing these patterns and seeing like where they came from and understanding. At the time, I didn't understand. I just felt this feeling of like, oh, release, you know, like, okay, like I can start feeling like it's okay to let go of that. And I came back to Toronto and I was just like, okay, I need to figure out what that was. Like whatever that experience I just had, I need to understand what happened there. I need to find someone who can teach me. Like that was different. And so I started like my own journey of just finding any breathwork teacher I could find. There wasn't a lot in Toronto, but I was on a search. I'd end up in like these apartments from these like hippies that were into whole tropical breathwork in the 70s. And I was going in there being like, yeah, like teach me, like traveling, like whatever I could find. And over the next couple of years, I started developing this practice using the rhythmic music, using other techniques. I picked up like heart coherence meditations and, you know, just like bioenergetics, like shaking the body, like moving energy and combining them all into a process that really worked for me and was helping me to get back to that space and having not the same experience, but similar different experiences, like very euphoric, very insightful, you know, releasing different emotions that, you know, I might've been holding on to. And, I started sharing it with people and they started having the same experiences. And I was like, okay, there's something here. Now, at the same time, this is probably around like 2017 now, I decided to open a business in Toronto called Elemental. It was a float studio with saunas, ice baths,
very cool.
Infrared sauna, cold hydrotherapy, because now I want to do a business that has meaning. And I'm starting to have this class that was building that people were requesting. They wanted, there's a waiting list. We need a place to do that. And I wanted a community space that people who are going through this kind of transformation or open to wellness or whatever it is, there's a community that's going to be supportive. So I didn't have that. And I was like, okay, this is going to be important as people are kind of having their own experiences. So that was my intention. And when this was like spring 2017, like I have this idea one day, I call up my real estate agent. I'm like, hey man, like I'm looking for a space kind of like this. What do you got? First space we go to, the guy doesn't show up to show it to us. Second space we go to, empty unit, natural lighting in the back. The address is 999. I don't even know what kind of business I'm going to put in there yet. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I'll take it. I sign this 5-year lease. And, you know, I'd heard about a floating business from a friend who's like, yeah, it's easy. You make good money. It's taking off right now. And I was very gullible and big risk taker. I was like, okay, like, yeah, I'm going to be the first one in this area to do it. Man, what a mistake. Well, from the business left brain side, it was a huge mistake, you know, because I went way over budget. I had no idea what I was doing. Never ran an in-person business, never ran like a wellness business. You know, and I decided I was going to build it out myself while I'm still running other businesses, and totally burned myself out, went over budget, went over the time. So like I'm delayed now. And by the time I open, now I got to learn, now I got to figure out how to manage this place, to market this place, to do customer service. And I was already burnt out, you know, and during that process, I started smoking cigarettes because all the construction workers were there and I felt stress. I was drinking wine every night and my health went like from like here to like all time low. And I was just like so hard on myself, so afraid of failing. And I was just like, man, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? I couldn't sleep, waking up like 4 a.m, going outside, having a smoke. And I'm just like, okay, worrying about failure is not going to save this place. And I start thinking, okay, like, what am I really worried about? And I start trying to think of who am I really worried about judging me for failing? It's like getting specific. And literally it took me 20 minutes. I could think of maybe 3 people that I hadn't talked to in years that might hear about it at a bar or something. Hey, did you hear about Gio? Like, you know, it was like, okay, like this fear is so insignificant on the judgment side.
Yeah.
Okay. If I lose my money, like everything is in here, I'm signed personally. What does that mean? Okay. The people who love me are going to stick with me. You know, I'll have to rebuild somehow. It's not the end of the end. Okay. I got to walk the walk. I got to just like stop all this bullshit I'm doing. It's like immediately that day, like I was really good at that. Like I could just put my mind to something to stop. So it's like, stop smoking, stop drinking wine. And I was like, any alcohol. And I was like, every single person that walks in this door, I'm going to treat them like they're the most important person on the planet. I'm just going to try to help them. Yeah. I'm just going to try to help them. Whether I can or not, I'm just going to try my best. And things changed immediately. Like some of the staff quit and new people are coming. When I was in that fear state, I was attracting people who were coming. They want a deal. They were skeptical. They didn't know if they should do it. And when I changed that, things changed. So I never really made money there. But as soon as I made that shift in my mindset and the energy I was giving off, it started becoming sustainable. Enough people were coming in, enough money was in to kind of keep the place going, and it was good. But what happened was the place became this community, and I started meeting the most amazing people, like all different walks of life, some very rich people, some very poor, but all just interesting people that I started connecting with. And 2 of the businesses I have now were seeded from that place. And if I never had that place, where I am now wouldn't have happened. And, you know, like every single time, like something's happening in your life, it has so much meaning, you might not even realize it. And I read a book called The Surrender Experiment around this time too, after I had gone through this. I don't know if you've read it. I think we talked about this last time. Really amazing book if you're listening, Surrender Experiment, Michael Singer. And he talks about like trying to determine the outcome of a situation. When you're in it, it's like, no, we don't know if it's going to be good or bad. We don't know what it has to fall. But I'll tell you one thing for sure. Every experience is a lesson. There's always a silver lining. There's always something that you can learn about yourself. And I look back on my life at every single hard experience, like something was there. And I just realized recently, it's crazy. I had a memory of I told you about the tattoo shop, which was another disaster. This was like another story, like way over budget, 3 floors right down Toronto on Yonge Street. You know, Yonge and Dundas Square in Toronto. It's like Times Square of Toronto. Super expensive rent. I have this Hare Krishna guy who, like, from Cuba, who's like, I got all the answers, know how to do this. I trust
him. But you didn't even have a tattoo, right?
No, like, I had my first tattoo, and he's like, oh, I've opened all these tattoo shops in Miami. Trust me. I trusted him. Like, I'm very trusting. And ended up like disaster. But what I remembered was I became vegetarian because of him. Okay. And to fast forward to this story, as I was kind of connecting with people at this new place, I wanted to become a coach. So I took a life coach certification. And for some reason, I went to this place called Vegan Fest in Toronto. This is like 6 or 7 years later after the tattoo shop. And I only went there because I was still vegetarian at the time. And I met a girl who I was doing those get-togethers with when we were showing the videos of Wim Hof a few years before that. It was the only reason I went there. And we lost touch. We kind of reconnected. And I asked her if she wanted to be a guinea pig for this new coaching thing I was doing. I needed someone to practice on. And in those sessions, she asked me to be her business partner in this personal development school that she was just a coach with a 3-month waiting list. She was also burnt out. And she was like, what do I do? And we kind of talked about creating a business she could scale, which I didn't really know much about. And my wife wanted to kill me because she saw how much stress I was bringing. She's like, if you start one more business, I'm going to kill you. Like, that's it. Like, she wouldn't have actually killed me, but she was like, and I said, listen, I said to her, if I ever come to you and say I'm going to start another business, convince me not to, hit me over the head, like do whatever you got to do. There's something there. And so we started this business and now it's become super successful. We've grown to like 30 employees. You know, my partner Thais was just on the Mel Robbins podcast and we have like all these members and we're helping all these people and the YouTube channel's blowing up. But if I would have quit that place where my mind was telling me and everything financially said, like, stop, don't do it, none of this would have came out of it.
Wow.
And what also happened was COVID happened. And COVID for in-person business was devastating. You know, it was just like, and I was like, man, like, we just finally started getting to, like, you know, just stability. Like 2 years into it, you know, 2018 we opened, it's like 2020. So 2 years, just past our 2 year anniversary was February 2020. And then March, everything shuts down. And I'm just like, man. And the breathwork class was going really good. All my staff, they're like, hey, man, I know you always said you're too busy, but now you got to teach us. Now you got to teach us how to do this breathwork. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Because the ego was like, hey, this is your competitive advantage. This is something unique. No one's doing this. If you teach them, now there's going to be like 7 or 10 of you. And like, that's not going to be good for business. I'm like, okay, let me think about it. So I go home that night and meditate on it. And immediately it's like, hey, man, like the insight's like, your mission is to help as many people as possible. You got to teach them. This is not about you. You didn't invent breathwork. You're a curator. You found some cool things, put it together, made it your own. You're like a DJ, man. So it's like, just share it. Don't think about what to do with it. Don't get your business mind or your logical mind always gets in trouble. Like, put that aside and just go from your heart. Just do it. So I dumped everything in my brain onto like a bunch of paper, made like a makeshift manual. So, okay, guys, next 3 or 4 days, you're with me. Obviously, schedules walked off anyway, so everyone's free, and we just did it. And what happened next kind of shocked me because, you know, the next after I taught them, I said, okay, now you got to practice. So find, you know, a bunch of people and they're going to be your guinea pigs. And you got to practice on them. And when they came back and started sharing their stories, like it just moved me in such a way because, you know, one person shared, yeah, like I did the breathwork with my father and we cried together for the first time. I'd never seen my father cry in my whole life. And we opened up and shared in a way and connected that I didn't think was possible.
Wow.
And thank you so much. Like, thank you so much for, I got goosebumps, for sharing this with me, you know? And I was like, wow. And then someone's like, yeah, I connected with an old friend that we kind of lost touch and we kind of were on the best terms. And this one session, like, we're back. And like, each one of them had their own story of like how impactful, but I think It was like the universe showing me, hey man, like, this is what you got to be doing. And I'm like, okay, well, let's keep doing it. And it was just organic and it just started growing and it grew. And now we have like 300 facilitators around the world. And I made this amazing network of people. I've got opportunities to work at amazing retreat centers like in Costa Rica. And I was living down there for a little bit. And I got some more crazy stories about that. But the moral of this story was, you know, what seemed like something that was so like, didn't make sense. And all of these other things happened in my life that at the time I would have done anything. If I said, give me a time machine, I'll cut off my left leg. You just bring me back 6 months. Like, I'll do it. You know what I mean? And I'll do something different. But then I wouldn't be where I am now. And it was so important to make it through those hard times. So on the other side of that pain, suffering, and learning, there is going to be some reward for you if you can not get stuck in that and not get stuck in your fear and cling on to this like victim mentality. And it reminds me of that Chinese parable, we'll see, you know, where, you know, we talked about this last time a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. But do recite it just for a moment.
Yeah.
We get that.
Yeah. So there's this parallel. I'm going to paraphrase it. I might not get it right, but, you know, there's this Chinese farmer and he's got a horse and one day the horse takes off and he loses his horse, his only horse. And everyone in the town comes in like, oh, you're cursed. What bad luck you have. You lost your only horse. And he's like, we'll see. A couple of days later, horse comes back, brings 2 other horses with it. So now he's got 3 horses. That's a 3x return on investment right there. You know?
Pretty good.
So all the towns are coming in. They're like, oh, you are blessed by the gods. You're so lucky. What good fortune you have. And he's like, yeah, we'll see. A couple of days later after that, his son's trying to like break in the horse so they can ride or use it. Horse throws him off. Kid breaks his leg. Brutal leg break. And everyone's like, oh, you know, it's an omen. It's a sign. You're bad luck. And he's like, we'll see. All of a sudden, you know, a couple of days later or a week later, war breaks out and the army's coming to pick up all the young kids that are army age. And obviously his son can't go. And then all the town comes back and it's like, oh, you're such good luck, whatever. And the moral of the story is like, we don't know in those moments if what's happening is good or bad, but we can attach ourselves to it. We could lose sleep over it. We can like really get sick over these little things we attach to it. But when we can step back, it's okay. Like something's happening and we don't know if it's good or bad. Let's just be open to the outcome because the outcome that you think in your mind, you know, it's easy to think about the worst case scenarios, but there's equally probably as probable best case scenarios that could still happen, that this could be a blessing in disguise. And I read a recent stat the other day that 85% of the bad thoughts, scenarios you have in your mind are never going to happen in your entire lifetime at all.
Yes.
There's one poet or writer that said, yeah, all the worst things you can imagine that is possible to happen to a human being have happened to me already, but in my mind.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah, but they experienced it. And so it's like, okay, like we punish ourselves with these thoughts of like the end of the world and doom and gloom, and they don't even happen. And so how do we kind of break free from that? Or at least know when you're going through something hard, it's like, hey, like be present. Like there's something here. You're going to move through it. You know, just don't get stuck in it. Don't become the victim. Don't give up. Like there's something. Look for the lesson. Look for the opportunity. And sometimes, like I said, with the tattoo shop, it took me 7 years later to realize why that was important, because it made that small one connection on that one day that now changed my whole life. Right? If I didn't become a vegetarian, I didn't meet the tattoo artist, I wouldn't have went to the vegan fest, and I wouldn't have met my current partner, who were the best of friends. We have an amazing business, and we're changing people's lives. And it had to happen that way. I had to go through all of that learning and suffering and ups and downs and going crazy to get to that. So that's where I am today. And we're doing the breath work. And we have the personal development school, and you know, like I just feel so blessed. But oh, and even to this year, so this year, I was living in Costa Rica for the last couple of years. When COVID happened, I was like, I'm taking my family, I'm getting out of here. Everything starts shutting down again. I was like, you know, I'm going to go on the beach somewhere, at least, you know, whatever. And I kind of abandoned that business, that the wellness studio. And, you know, I gave it to a partner that was my manager. I was like, listen, man, do what you can here. I came back and he just wasn't doing the greatest job. Let's just say we kind of had a little bit of falling out. Okay, like, what am I going to do with this place now? So I start putting more money in. I'm trying to like build it up. And I realized like this thing is no longer really like I'm all these other things I'm doing, you know? So I'm like, either I got to sell it, I got to get an investor, or I got to shut it down. So I contemplate selling it, unsellable, because COVID, financials are crap. It's not making money right now. It's just below break even. It's really going to be hard to find the right suitors going to want to take on this business because it's complicated. You know, like a lot of machinery, a lot of leaks, a lot of like different moving pieces. But I knew now how I would redesign it in a way that I thought would be way more efficient, way more profitable. Some of my friends that I helped open a space in Toronto called Othership. It's an amazing concept. And it's more of like a social hot and cold experience. And they're doing amazing. And I saw that and like, you know, like could have probably got involved with them, but I had too much going on. And you know, so anyways, and then, so I tracked all these investors. So I have some like really good investors, two of them actually that were kind of wanting to get in. And, you know, I knew they were really, really successful and, you know, like could be great partners and all the way up till the end of the year. And we're about to do this renovation, you know, we're about to kind of close down. And I just felt this like feeling of like being trapped, but this feeling of like, no, this is not what you're supposed to be doing. Because I knew that if I took this money from these investors to like reinvest in this place, I was going to be stuck here for the next 2 or 3 years. I would have to be doing it full time. They were expecting me to kind of be the guy to bring this back to this thing. And with the other stuff I have going on, I couldn't actually commit to that. So I had to tell them like, hey guys, I can't do this. And I had to say no, which was something like the whole time I had this place, I was like always like had this belief that some big investor is going to come in and make it so easy and take care of it and like blow it up. And like always it's this delusional kind of fantasy of like this next person is going to come in. We had so many wealthy people come in. Like, there's always a Ferrari in our parking lot or, you know, like the area we're in. And I never asked anyone, never wanted to make it like I was trying, but I was like, if the right person comes and they want to like it's going to happen. And I had two of these people not wanting to do it. And like, and I said no. And I said no because I knew it was the wrong decision. Although everything in my mind was justifying why I should do it. You know, don't be a failure. You know, like your friends are doing it. Now's the right time. You have the investors, you have the concept. And it was just when I got into my heart, it was just like, nah, no, you don't need this. You need to spend more time with your kids and your family and focus on what you already have in front of you. Because you know that's already real and you know how good it is. Don't let your mind kind of get in there. And what my biggest fear was 7 years ago was going failing. I chose it. I ended up choosing to like close it down, pay off all the debt to the bank. And the one thing I said is, if I'm going to close this, I'm going to close it with integrity. So like anyone that has credits still here, I'm going to pay them back, or I'm going to give them credits to other studios in the area, the bank, I'm going to like show up, the landlord, I'm going to make sure like any repairs, like I'm going to help take care of it. And man, like the way I feel now is just like incredible, like light. Like I did it properly. It made sense why I had that whole experience and why like it took 7 years. It was a 7 year cycle, exactly 2024, to move through it. And now I feel like I'm coming out the other side.
Wow.
And that's where I am today. You know? And at the same time, I realized the biggest fear I had was fear of conflict. And that goes back to fear of being alone. You know, like all those things, safety, you know, being unsafe, fear of conflict, because I would just let things go. And this is what got me in trouble in the past. And I was hanging on to this place because I didn't want to deal with all the conflict of the bank and the landlord and the employees and the community. But who was really receiving the conflict was me internally. And then once I realized that was the reason, I said, okay, I'm just going to show up. Anytime the bank calls, I'm going to answer. Anytime I can do. And it wasn't the fear that I thought it was going to be. It wasn't as bad as it was actually. Opposite of what my fear was. I thought this is gonna be so hard, it's gonna be so bad. It's like, no, you show up in integrity and it's gonna work itself out. And you know, because you're gonna show up in integrity, you can control that. You know, no matter what, just try your best to make things right. And then it was like, okay, where else in my life do I feel the same feeling of fear of confrontation, fear of conflict? I started seeing relationships that were out of alignment, people who were just taking from me, taking advantage of me. Another business that I was kind of just starting. Where again, like I knew it wasn't right, but the people I was doing with, I really loved and wanted to work with them. And it's like, no, like I gotta honor myself and have these conversations, but show up with love, integrity, and compassion. And each conversation went amazing. You know, like even the ones where I had to cut off a few friends, you know, because like they weren't really friends, they understood. And I said, this is the way I feel. This is the way you've made me feel. And this is why I don't think we should be friends. This is why, like, you know, I need my space from you. And it felt good to set a boundary, but I think it also may have opened something up in them for self-reflection. And I allowed them to share, like, hey, like, tell me if I've been an asshole, have I done something wrong? Is like the reason why you've been like this? And, you know, what happened is apologies, and it's just really mutual kind of separation. But, and it's funny because, like, I know this already, and I tell a lot of clients that I work with, it's like all the stuff you have in your subconscious mind, the fears, the beliefs, the doubts, the regrets, although it's not top of mind, it's using up that bandwidth inside. It's using up that central processing unit in your brain. Yes. And when you can clear that out, then you're gonna have all this energy now to create, because this fear, this worry, these subconscious beliefs are gone. Or you start to not gone completely, but you start getting rid of some of them. You start putting in new beliefs, which is the truth about yourself. And that's when you really transform. But it's so hard to do it on yourself, to turn the mirror inwards. Okay, like now I gotta do this, because I wasn't aware of it, but it took all these experiences to kind of bring my awareness. And that's kind of like where I am right now.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. That's a crazy transformation. And with many, many turns as well in between. How much of that would you credit your personality versus happenstance and just hoping for the best, and your practice of meditation, breath work, diet, health in general, psychedelics and all of that?
Yeah. So I don't know what the personality side, because like, it's hard to say, like when you're yourself, it's hard to know like what it would be like to be different,
yeah.
But the practice is so important, you know, like the diet, the practice, the self-reflective practices like breath work and plant medicine, because it helps you to get insight. So on the lowest level, it's like exercise, nutrition, right? So that's like, if you're not doing that, remember, your brain is going to be foggier. You're not going to be as clear. Stress level is going to be up. When you're stressed, your mind is not clear. You're going to fight or flight more often. Some people are in perpetual fight or flight. I've been there a lot myself. When you're fight or flight, you're just looking at everything that's wrong because you're looking for danger. So your mind is always looking for the worst case scenarios to protect, to run away. And it hates uncertainty. So if you can help yourself by exercising to reduce stress, to sleep better, to eat healthy, sauna, ice bath, that's something you can just do and you'll start feeling better and get clarity, you know, and it takes some commitment for sure. But then like the second layer to that is trying to go inward to feel like, where are these beliefs coming from? What are these things that are making me feel these feelings? You know, people don't just have anxiety. People don't just have depression. There's beliefs underneath that, that will affect the way that they're operating this world. And I'll try to explain a little better. You know, like the way the mind works is there's layers, or way experience, reality's experience. And at the base layer is beliefs. So you grow up, you're born, you come into this world, no one knows what's going on, and the ego and the subconscious mind is creating programs to survive, your safety. So something happens, and it's like, oh, that didn't feel good. Now I'm going to create a belief about this. So, you know, let's just say, you know, in grade one, you know, Sebastian, you stand up from the class, and, you know, you're going to do a presentation, and your underwears are sticking out of your shirt because it's tucked in. And everyone starts making fun of your underwears, like, oh, Sebastian has red polka dot underwears. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh my God, turn red. You go sit back down, and never again you ever feel comfortable in front of a crowd. Never again.
By the way, that is crazy because you almost channeled me. Because to me, the first sort of 10 years of school were like that. And it started, it wasn't the underwear. I have heard that before, that people actually dreamed of coming to school and they don't wear underwear. It must be, I don't know how that's related to whatever. For me, it was like I was dyslexic. And really, people were making a lot of fun of me. And I tried to cope with that by being just a bully in the schoolyard, but it didn't really help my grades. And it took a couple of incidences. The first one that really made a shift was like, I did a master's and I was offered a PhD by a professor. And I'm like, oh, surely he must know that I'm just faking. Like, I'm not that good. I'm not even good enough to do the master's. I was just lucky, you know. And that was the imposter syndrome all the way coming from primary school. So I totally relate to it. It's interesting that, you know, some people are happy with school. Like, I'm the opposite. Like, for me, school was, well, it was shaping. But then, you know, exactly what you say as well, that you never know. We will see. We'll see. And if it wouldn't be for that, I wouldn't have been an entrepreneur. I wouldn't have taken a risk. I wouldn't have tried to be different because the status quo of society didn't work for me. So well done for channeling that.
Yeah. So belief gets formed there, right? Like, and there's different ways people respond. Some people retract, some people become a bully. Okay. Like, now people are going to make fun of me. Now they're going to be scared to make fun of me. And this is the way that I'm going to protect myself. You know? Or there's a belief that, like, okay, like, I got to work extra hard now because I'm stupid if I want to prove myself, or, you know, whatever, like all these beliefs that start forming. You can shift the belief. So maybe when you got your PhD, you realize, actually, you got to be smart enough to get a PhD where probably most of those people that went to my school didn't even graduate high school. Okay, so you change that belief now in later years. Or you can realize that the belief was not true in the first place and find examples in your life and start reprogramming it. So that's beliefs, right? So we get these beliefs and everyone has different beliefs. So it's either the things we see, the things we hear, or the things we experience. And it can be like one thing that happens that's really intense, like a car accident or a traumatic event or something that's repeated over time. And we form these beliefs. And then to protect ourselves, you know, based on these limiting beliefs, like I am unsafe, I am alone, I am not good enough. Like there's probably about 20 of those core ones. We navigate the world. So something happens after beliefs is thoughts. Something happens, we think about what that means. So the same event, both of us might look at, to one of us like, oh my God, that's so scary or whatever. Yeah. The other one's like, oh my God, that was the coolest thing ever, you know, based on our beliefs, right? And different people have different beliefs. After your thoughts comes emotions. So something happens, you interpret what it means, and then you react good, but you feel it, you know, you feel it. It happens really quickly. Sometimes it's imperceptible how fast it happens. And then finally is action. You react. Do you run? Do you hide? Do you laugh? Do you jump up? Like you have a physical reaction. So some people have this thing their whole life because of certain beliefs. And then when you can change that belief, there's a ripple effect out because now your thoughts change, your emotions change, your actions change. So you realize as you start changing your beliefs and challenging them, everything in your life changes. It's like the lens through which you see the world shifts all of a sudden and you're not going to react as much. We're seeing the things that used to trigger you. And we go through this a lot in our coaching training because we use breath work. The thing that's amazing about breath work is when you do cyclic breathing, so a few rounds of breathing, your brain waves start to change. It goes from beta, alpha, even to theta. And that's that's when you're most suggestible. And so when you get into that state, now you can prompt questions or you can just go beyond the ego in the prefrontal cortex. And they found the same thing with psychedelics, that in the prefrontal cortex, that's when we're ruminating. So when we're not occupying ourselves with doing something like a task, we start to ruminate, and that's where the activity gets. And we start self-judgment and self-reflection, and like all these, like whatever. And they notice that the breath work and psychedelics shuts that off. Like it deactivates that part of the mind. So they can go deeper into the subconscious, have memories and stuff like that. And so when we're doing all this reprogramming work, we try to identify where the beliefs come from. And then how you reprogram it is through repetition and emotion. So anyone can reprogram the subconscious mind. You identify the belief and you find the opposites of that where it's already true in your life. So, you know, like, I am unsafe. You have this belief I'm unsafe, but you don't know. You just feel unsafe all the time. So, okay, like, I'm safe because I have my own house. I live in a safe country. I have, you know, a security system. Maybe you have like guns or whatever you have, but you start showing yourself all the things, repeat daily. And after a couple of weeks, the initial beliefs goes away because you put in the new belief, which is the truth. And the subconscious mind believes that, and things will start to change. And it works for all the subconscious.
It's amazing. So you can, there's quite a connection then between psychedelics and how they work and breath work as well.
Some connections for sure. A lot we're still finding out. Like, it's like, I'm learning things every day about, you know, what happens in the brain on psychedelics, what happens in the brain during breath work. And the human organism is so complex and each human being is so different. But we're seeing a lot of amazing breakthroughs. You know, for example, you know, this is just anecdotal story, but a pretty powerful one. You know, we were in Peru on a men's trip a couple of years ago, and we were drinking huachuma, which was like a cactus from Peru. And you drink it, and it's like a mescaline-based kind of psychedelic, very ancient, been around for thousands of years. It's called San Pedro. When the Spanish went in, they gave it to the priests, and they saw God, and they called it San Pedro. Was where it got the name. St. Peter opens the doors to heaven. So anyways, we're on this retreat, and a couple of days in, we're at one of the sacred sites up in the mountains, and the retreat leader is like, hey, Gio, you want to run a breath work up here? I'm like, you got a speaker? He's like, yeah. He's got this little, like, dinky speaker. I was like, yeah, good enough. So we get all the guys. We didn't take any plant medicine this day, and we just lay on the top of this ruin, just like a big, flat, like, plateau, and we do this breath work session, and it was amazing. And one of the attendees, my friend Jake, now he's my friend, had this huge like emotional release. Like, he was crying the same way I was crying, and cried for probably 30 minutes after. And he comes up to me and he's like, after, I'm like, hey, you okay? He's like, yeah, you know, it's crazy experience. You know, he shared that he healed his autoimmune disease in that one session.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I've heard a lot of crazy things after people, you know, will do a ceremony of ayahuasca or something like that, where they claim like, oh, I'm gonna be the next president of the United States or blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, whatever, Jake. But I'm like, I didn't say that. I was like, oh, that's amazing. You know, like, wow. He's like, yeah, I felt this something lift out of me. I feel so light. He's like, I just know it's healed. Two or three months later, I get invited to do a retreat in Alaska where we're doing a breathwork training and a couple of days retreat in nature. And Jake shows up. And I totally forgot about him telling me that part of the story. Yeah. And he comes up to me and he's like, hey, Gio, guess what? I can eat pizza and drink beer now. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, remember like that thing? And I said, my autoimmune, like, holy crap. Are you serious? He's like, yeah. Listen, like, if I would have ate any of those, I'd have been in the bathroom. I'd have been like diarrhea, blood, like, you name it, throwing up. Like, it was bad. And now it's completely gone. And completely out, completely.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, in that experience, he's like, I grew up in like a cult, and I had all this trauma as a child, and I always felt unsafe. And in the experience, I was able to go to my younger self, who I'd locked in a cage to protect him and let him know, hey, it's safe to come out. And as I brought him out in that experience and we kind of embraced, like I just melted, like my heart expanded and felt this feeling of love. And then all this weight lifted out of where I feel all of this kind of like issue in my belly, and everything's been different ever since. Like, okay, wow. So it's anecdotal, but we have tons of stories like that of people who have gone through healings through breath work. And when you think about it, like, if you're holding on to a belief or a trauma that has you in fight or flight all the time, what happens? Stress levels are increased. Cortisol is increased. Your body's going to fight or flight. What's happening? Your digestion, because fight or flight's like pushing everything out, so like to get ready to run. So if that's 24/7, of course you're gonna have digestive issues. Of course you're gonna get things like Crohn's, colitis, and IBS and stuff like that, right? Now, can we repeat this? Can anyone that has those things come to a breath work? No, like, we don't know, like, why Jake, why then, what it was, but it's just proof that it's possible. And that's what's interesting to me. Like, what else is possible? You know, like, we have a doctor who's taken, he took the training, became a facilitator. He facilitates. He's loving it. And we had another woman who went to do ayahuasca and it didn't work for her. Like it was just like, she wasn't connecting to it. And they told her, you have so many blockages and your mind is so strong that you're holding back, you're resisting it. And she got into breath work and she's a doctor. She's an MD. And she couldn't sleep. She had high blood pressure medication. She was high stress. And she knew, she was like, I'm going to die in the next 10 years if I don't change something.
Yeah.
Like, feel like got out of a really bad divorce, bad relationship. And she started doing breath work like every other day. And she said within a month, she could sleep and her blood pressure went down. And she started feeling feelings for the first time in her life. She actually felt feelings, but she was so closed off. And she became a breathwork facilitator. And like within 1 year, she's a completely different person. And now she shares it with her colleagues. She shares it with her patients. And she said in her practice, they stopped using general anesthesia, and they only use localized because the patients don't need it anymore because they're doing breathwork now instead to help them feel less pain. And
incredible.
And there's hundreds of stories like this. You know, with this, I am with plant medicine ayahuasca. It's like how it works. It's like, I don't know. It's like the strangest kind of things. And this kind of stuff, it might sound a little woo-woo to someone listening the first time. I definitely, if you had told me this stuff 10 years ago before I went on my journey, I would have been the same. Like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
But I've seen it with my own eyes. I've experienced some of these things that are so crazy that like I only can laugh at it now because like the probability of some of these things happening, can the logical mind could say it's like one in a billion. And I'll tell a story about that, about when I made the documentaries on ayahuasca in just a second. Probability is like one in a billion, or it's 100%. It could only have happened this way. It's just like, this is the way it was always meant to be. And no problem in the world can explain it because it can only happen this way. And that's it. You know, this is life. You know, your life is happening. And it's like, we can think about, oh, wow, what if that 1 second was different? But it's like, it's always going to happen for you in exact way it does.
Yeah. This incredible documentation that you put together, the Stoko. How did that come about? When was that roughly in your journey? Because I saw it was maybe uploaded 5 years ago. So that must have been. So you had already your center by then.
Yes. Yeah. So it started right after my first plant medicine journey. So I came back from Brazil and I thought I'd found the answer. Like I found something that, you know, it's going to be on like CNN next week. Like, you know, like this is it. Like people need to know about this. And I started telling people, and this is very common. Like people do ayahuasca the first time, they go back, they want to tell everyone. Everyone looks at them like they got two heads. And it's always a thing. It's like, oh yeah, you must've just done like there's a lot of memes about it online. It's like, oh yeah, how do you know someone just did ayahuasca for the first time? Yeah, they can't stop talking about it. And so that was me. And like people, like I thought they were going to be more receptive. And like, I was going to bring up like 10 people down there the next time. And people were like, are you okay? Like, do you need to go like the mental institution now? Like, crazy. I'm like, no. Like, so I started creating these arguments, not arguments, but like topics of like safety, history, scientific studies, case studies of transformation. And I knew a lot of people in the space because the podcast, and I was like, maybe let's just make a documentary. No film experience, never did anything like that, but I like the challenge. And so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna make this documentary. And so I started filming. I hired some people to help me with like graphic editing and stuff like that. And it was all self-funded. It wasn't a big budget. And I almost didn't put it out because by the time it was kind of ready to go, all this fear came up, fear of judgment. It's like, oh man, like in the business world, like if people I do business with see this, are they going to think, you know, hey, I don't want to do business with this guy, like all these things. And to a point where like there's two or three times where I scrapped the whole project. It was like, okay, it's over. Like, forget it. It's not going to happen. And then I had this realization. It was like, and now like I live by this. Like when you get to the point of just not giving a care about what anyone cares about you and being your authentic self, it's the most liberating feeling ever because like you don't have to pretend. And I realized like, hey, like I was someone different in a certain business situation. I was somewhere different with my kids, someone different with my friends, someone different with whatever. And I had to dress a certain way. And like, man, I wear sometimes the most ridiculous clothes. I don't care. Like I wear like a fancy hat or like flowing shirts and there's just a suit. Like, I don't care. At the time I cared a lot. I said, okay, like if they're not going to do business with me or not going to like me, then probably I shouldn't do business with them anyways. And that was my fear. But what happened was the opposite again, like so many times in my life, like my fear actually, when I tried to confront it or actually confronted it, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. People were interested. People would ask me questions. Maybe they weren't ready to do it, but they were curious. And what happened was I started getting all of these, like a couple of years later, the whole psychedelic industry kind of like, kind of took off. The psychedelic industry became a thing where people were investing money in it. And now people thought I was some sort of expert. I would say expert in experiential expert. I've done a lot of plant medicines, but I got an advisor role with a few companies where they were, you know, they wanted to know about like all these things that they had no idea. They were business guys, money guys that were trying to get into plant medicines, and it created this opportunity for me. But the story I want to tell about that, and you can watch it on YouTube for free. It's called Psyched Out, if anyone's watching. I'm sure Sebastian put that in the show notes.
Love it. We'll do it.
It's like some of the stories in there. I won't give them all away because I think it's worth watching. The transformation that people had, where they were in their life, and how, you know, from such a dark rock bottom they came back. But I'll tell you a story about the making of the film, which is another one like kind of like woo-woo weird that, you know, I didn't think was possible. So anyways, I'm making this film, and there was a guy that would travel to Ontario, which is the province where I live, every few months to do like an ayahuasca ceremony. He studied for like 20 years in Peru. And he would come, he lived somewhere in Canada, and he would come out. And so, you know, I went up, interviewed him because I wanted someone who served the medicine, their perspective on it. And I did this awesome interview, and then I connected with the Dr. Gabor Mate. Some of you guys might have heard of him. He's written a bunch of books. He's was initially serving ayahuasca in Vancouver's East End, Lower East End, where they had a lot of drug addiction problems. And he was giving ayahuasca to these guys and having amazing transformations with some of their addiction issues. Because addiction, it's not the drug. It's the drug is filling a void for some sort of trauma or something that's there. You know, like that's. That's a big misconception about drug addiction. You know, a lot of times people think, yeah, just stop doing it. But they're doing it to kind of avoid the pain that they feel when they're not doing it because of the things that have happened to them in their life and stuff like that. So anyways, I go out to Vancouver and I interview Gabor Mate. And he's like, there's two people you got to interview. I asked him, who do you think else I should interview? So there's like a good people that, you know, have great stories. And there's two people. There's one in Toronto, Lisa. She was an 18-year heroin addict that transformed her life. I went, perfect. I live in Toronto. That's no problem. I'll definitely connect with her. And the other one, her name is Mindy. Myung was her Asian name. And she is from Boston. I'm like, okay, I don't have budget to go to Boston, but get the crew, all this stuff, but I'll get the one in Toronto. So I go interview Lisa in Toronto. I got all my interviews wrapped up. I'm going to editing for the first time. And I open the file with the shaman, and it's totally corrupted. Like I can't open 1 second of one file. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, I'm like, okay, this is a sign. We're not supposed to do this. You know, I was already in my head about, should I do it? Should I not? Scrap it. And I'm like, okay, I'll send him an email because this guy didn't even have social media. He didn't have a phone, like he wasn't into electronics. I'm like, I'll send him an email, I'll see what happens. Email him, hey man, this is what happened. It's a bummer, sort of bother you. But if you have some time or if you're going to be here again, I'd love to, you know, redo this and whatever. I get an email the next day. So it's like a Wednesday. I get an email the Thursday. It's like, hey man, perfect timing. I'm actually going to be up there this weekend. Come Saturday morning and we'll do it. No problem. And I'm like, couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Problem is, I don't own a camera. I don't have anyone available to come and help me shoot this thing. I have no idea what I'm doing, like with like cameras and stuff. So I call my buddy, I borrow his camera, and I just start driving up there. So I drive up there. It's like a 2-hour drive. And I get there. Lo and behold, half the people who are attending that retreat are from the Toronto film and music industry. Experts of the experts. Like, they set up my camera for me, get the lighting perfect outside, like where the tree was. And I do this interview. It's like the most amazing interview because I asked him the questions I asked him before, and I thought of more questions I want to ask him.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what a sign. What a synchronicity. This is perfect, you know? And I go back into this big like farmhouse, and I'm just in the kitchen having a glass of water. And this woman walks in, and I start talking to her, and we're chatting up, and I'm asking a bit about her journey with ayahuasca, and she says she's on a healing journey, and ask her where she's from. She says she's from Boston, and I look at her hands, and Gabor Mate said she had scleroderma, this girl from Boston. And scleroderma is a very painful disease, usually about 10 years of suffering, where you turn to a human mummy and you slowly die. Your body just kind of like shrivels up, you go in a wheelchair and you die. And I looked at her hands and I was like, your name wouldn't be Mindy, would it? She's like, yeah. And I'm like, all of a sudden, goosebumps again. All of a sudden, like, I look at her and she's kind of like looking at me like, how do you know my name? Like, okay, it's going to sound crazy, but, you know, Dr. Gabor Mate said I should interview you for this documentary and I wasn't supposed to be here this weekend, but I told the whole story. And she's like, yeah, absolutely, I'd love to be in it. And so we filmed her story and became like the centerpiece of the whole documentary of like her story of healing and transformation from this disease that's incurable, right? And I was thinking about it after I was driving back. I was like, how is that possible? Like it felt like the spirit of the ayahuasca, it's called woo-woo, somehow was able to corrupt that video exactly at that time, knowing that, okay, like this next series of events is going to happen so that we can get this message out there and share this with other people and get the right people in there. It's just, to this day, it blows my mind. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Amazing. Falling into place. And it's a great documentary.
Yeah.
So good. And yes,
thank you.
His video in particular, very good lighting. Very nice. Very good sound. Incredible.
Awesome.
Gio, so, where from there?
Where from there? Like in the story?
Yeah.
Oh, so that was kind of like, then I sat with it for a couple of years and just released in 2018 when I was just like, okay, I don't care anymore. I opened up the studio and I put the documentary out and that's where the kind of studio took over.
So you had it ready for a while before you released it?
Yeah. Well, it took a while to sure. make it because I didn't know what I was doing. And then like, okay, I don't like this. Okay, rechange the whole thing, pull this out. Yeah, it took a while. And then I sat on it for a bit, didn't want to release it. But yeah, then I finally did. And it was like something happened on YouTube because it was taking off in like the algorithm.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it stopped. So I don't know what happened, but the algorithm didn't like it at one point. But it's okay. It's doing what it needs to do. The people that watch, I've got so much amazing feedback and people that have connected with it and sent me a message or like said thank you or became friends. So it's been a great experience, you know, just to kind of share that, you know, be creative. You know, like I never really considered myself creative, like an artist or anything like that. But, you know, this was like my creative endeavor to give to the world and just to share and give back for all the gifts that it's given me. And some people ask me, you know, like, man, you must be really messed up to do ayahuasca like 100 times. You're like, what's you okay? And I'm like, yeah, in the beginning, it's like you go through like, I guess your problems. You realize like, man, I'm way too serious in life. And like, who gives a crap about half the things I worry about? But then it was this continual journey of learning about myself, going deeper on certain topics, like how to be a better dad, how to be a better husband, give me perspective on how to run my business is better, how to be more conscious, more collaborative, more compassionate. And so every time I go, it enhances my life a little bit more. And that's what I love about it. And you got to be careful because some people can use psychedelics as an escape as well. You know, it's just like, I don't like what's here. I'll go there, escape for a bit, and then just go right back to where it was. That's why the integration is so important. Like how you take the lessons you've learned and bring them into your real life, whether it's with plant medicine or with breath work. Yeah. Any practice, you know, any practice, like that integration aspect is so important. So then from there, you know, I got out of some of the other businesses. I gave away the construction company. I just gave it to my partner because it was like, you can have it. The other food company, one of them, I'm an advisor for. I let my brother kind of partner on that one. The other food manufacturing company, I said, guys, I'm out. Offer me whatever you want. I'll take it. Just whatever you want. And they gave me a crappy offer and I took it, you know, I was like, okay. And now I'm kind of finally after 41 years, you know, this last year, when I came back, I was going through that process where I felt stuck. I didn't know what to do. I knew something was off. You know, I'm into this thing called the gene keys. You heard the gene keys or human design?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, a human design is called gene keys.
No, they're two separate things. Are very similar in the way they use your astrological birth chart to create a map of certain things to focus on in your life. And human design for me is like how to use your map to kind of like go out into the world and like what you're going to be good at and what you should do. And Gene Keys is about like this inward journey of transformation. So a little bit different.
That's really interesting. And just on that, like one of our latest guests was Christine Harper, and she is she studied human design. The founder of it. He's not around anymore. His name is Ra. And I subscribe for it. But great that I found out the other side. So actually, how to go into it. So I definitely will check it out.
Yeah, and I heard about human design the first time I did ayahuasca in Brazil. Someone there told me about it. I never really took it seriously. And then just this year when I got back, a friend of mine was telling me about this Gene Keys thing. And I looked at my human design profile and I was like kind of shocked because I got it done like 5 years ago. And at the time, half the things I looked at, I was like, oh yeah, this is me. The other half, I was like, my ego was like, no, this is not me. This is bullshit. This thing is not good. I look at it now like, man, if I would just listen to that 5 years ago, I would have like avoided so much pain and suffering in my life. But it was good, necessary. To make a long story short, the Gene Keys, when I looked into it, like two of the main keys in my profile was transforming the shadow of complexity into simplicity. So they have these shadow that has a gift in it, and then like a city, which is the highest expression of that kind of gene key. The gene keys are attached to the I Ching, which is a 64 lines Taoist philosophical text. And I love the beginning of that. The first line of that book is just by putting this into writing, it's already lost most of its meaning. Meaning it's like this mystical kind of thing that words don't even do justice. So anyways, he relates it to like the 64 codons of DNA, and he's saying how they're all related, and there's no such thing as junk DNA, and you can actually activate your DNA. So anyways, mine that were present was that one, and he opens the talk, because he does these little talks on them. He says, yeah, so most people spend the first 40 years of their life making it as complex as possible, and the next 40 years trying to like wind down back to simplicity before they die. And I'm like, oh my God, this is my life. So I was sold right there.
Yeah.
And the next one was transforming half-heartedness through commitment to devotion. And I was like, no, man, it's not me. But the whole point of it is the ones you have, you're supposed to sit with it, contemplate it, like really like be present to it. And I realized that, you know, I went all in on so many things that I could only be half-hearted in all of them because I was split in so many directions. Once I had realization, I was like, you know, like I'm giving 10% to my family, 10% to this business, 10% to my friends, whatever the percentage was, but I can't show up fully.
Yes.
And I need to simplify my life. And I didn't know how to do it, but I just sat with it. And I kind of like prayed on it or meditated on whatever you want to call it, and allowed it kind of this, all these opportunities that happened last year to like close the business, let go, and transform that into like this thing that now I can commit to and I can dive deeper in. And really, like, I feel so much different and better. And there's so much more I wanted to talk about, but we didn't even get into it. But what I will say is breathwork and plant medicine changed my life. And whether, you know, you're curious about breathwork, even if you just get into the mechanics, like improving your breathing mechanics, that can change everything. Your sleep, performance. And it has to do with like the simplest is like breathing through your nose, breathing into your belly, slowing down your breath, breathing less volume, your body will start adapting. And I started getting into like CO2 tolerance. And there's a guy, Konstantin Buteyko, Dr. Buteyko from Russia, that was studying astronauts for when the 60s were sent into space. And he found out that as people are getting really sick and dying, they start breathing faster, or vice versa. You know, like the breathing faster made them sicker. And so he started helping people reduce their breath and was reversing disease. Heart disease, like all kinds of different things. And he was like, if certain people can get to a certain level of carbon dioxide in their blood, which is like a few markers, but basically if they could hold their breath for like 3 minutes without like hyperventilation, they're in this like super health echelon that they can't get sick. Even if they can do that for 1 minute, it's like normal everyday human diseases can't touch them. That was his kind of claim. And so with our school online and what I do for work, I teach people first how to breathe better and then to work on how do we get deeper into like what's causing this nervous system to get out of whack. And so I got some interesting findings, some really interesting science that's coming out recently. And yeah, one thing that I'll just share, actually I won't share it. I'll save it for me the next time I come on. But Yeah, because I'm going to write the book, and I don't want to give it away, but it was really kind of eye-opening. So I'll share. I'm writing a book right now on breathwork.
Oh, another creative project on the side.
Great. Yeah, yeah, my whole company is like, dude, just write a book. Like, share the stories of transformation in breathwork. People need to hear it. Share some of the science and all that stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'll do it. A lot of resistance, but I'm going to do it. But yeah. I'll stop rambling. I feel like I've been rambling the last hour. I want to see like any questions or
no, Gio, not at all. I think it's really inspiring to just follow your journey and how many insights you got that you can also actually convey of like, this was a pivotal moment. This is what happens. This is the mindset that I had before and after. I found that extremely helpful to have the courage to maybe do something that people wouldn't otherwise do or that feel, well, maybe it's not. It's just me. Like, I remember thinking, I'm probably the only one that thinks like that. I'm the only one that is different. And you know, and therefore, it's not really justified for me to ask for something different because everyone seems to be happy with it. But reality is that there are around the world a lot of people that are actually quite similar to me. And even the people around me might not be happy. It just sounds that way. Or I just haven't had the conversation that would actually clarify, oh, they're on the same journey. They look for more. They you know. That they are stuck in certain ways. That they want to figure it out. As you said, there's nothing to figure out. It's actually just what it is. And so I found that super, super encouraging and so beautiful how you share so openly as well. There's a lot of vulnerability in it. You know, you talk a lot about failure there.
It took me a while to get here, I'll tell you. You know, it wasn't easy at first. But it was part of that, like, put it all on the table and you have nothing to hide. You know what I mean? It's like, this is who I am. And I got nothing to hide. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. And it's liberating. Like, again, like challenging your fear. So one thing that is like, when you have fear somewhere, it's like, that's a thing. Hey, there's something there for you. There's a gift in there. If you can kind of like lean into it, you know, and I'm not saying go jump off a bridge or grab a stunt car or whatever, but like be present in your life. Cause like you're the star in the story of your life, you know, and you can choose the role you want to play. You don't have to be the hero. You don't have to do crazy things, but you only live one life here, probably many other after, but at any moment you have the ability to choose, do I want to do something different today? Do I want to really explore or see what's beyond that comfort zone? Because the ego, all it's trying to do is keep you in survival. And certainty for the ego is where it loves certainty. Even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's crap, uncertainty is like, stay away.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's why, like, you know, like once you start going there, and you're like, okay, like on the other side, there's like, there's going to be more challenges, but there's all this beauty there as well, the other side of your fear. I encourage anyone listening, you know, to take that in a safe way, you know, not do anything crazy, but like start like leaning in where you feel fear, afraid to have a conversation, afraid to try something new. You know, there'll be a lot of it in there for you, like a lot of growth and expansion.
Yeah, exactly. And expansion and taking boundaries the way that one had before. Because once you have been there, you actually realize like, oh, it's possible. You know, expand it again. Mm-hmm. And that opens new possibilities and more movement, I guess, to learn more. So, yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Gio, if people want to learn more about what you do, your content that you've put online, and you've put quite a bit online, which is awesome, but you also have trainings, online courses, and that type of thing. What's the best place to find out about that?
Yeah, so you can check out elementalrhythm.com. It's our website. That's where you have like the breathwork stuff. There's breathwork tracks. There's some free stuff on there. You can just listen. You can Google my name. Probably a few things will come up. Luckily, I got a very unique name, so there's not a lot of me out there. There's only a few that I've met or found out. I'm on Instagram mostly or Facebook. So at elementalgeo is my Instagram handle, or on Facebook. Just search my name. And
amazing.
Yeah, I'm pretty good to reply if you have a question you want to send me. And I got a podcast called Geocast. It's just a solo podcast where I just share some insights, like usually 15 or 20 minutes. We'll talk a lot about my plant medicine journeys and insights there, things that are going on. It's like, try to keep it short, and it's just me kind of rambling sometimes, but
love
I have
it.
A lot of fun with it.
Yeah. No, yeah. And yeah, you're a great person to listen to. You're a good voice too.
Yeah, thank you. So the same about you.
Thanks, man. Well, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. And I hope I have to have you back. I know you have so much more to share. So, you know, it would be amazing to have a second part for this at one stage.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on here. And I had a lot of fun sharing with you. And yeah, I'd love to be back. And yeah, hopefully we'll see you soon in the future.
We hope you got a lot out of today's inspiring conversation. Please share this episode with someone you know needs to hear it. Whether they are a seasoned health expert or just beginning their wellness journey, these stories of remarkable transformation, success, and valuable insights will certainly help empower more people. Until next time, have the best life ever.